We are going to pivot from the news now to a song you probably know.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord.
Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah.
Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, Katie Lang, singing Cohen's Hallelujah. But then there are also these versions.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Sandy, screw you. We'll freaking kung fu ya!
Kung fu ya!
Cause we're New Yorkers!
We started with Michael McDonald, British-American Idol contestant Alexander Burke, a school choir in Iceland, and Adam Sandler at the Sandy Benefit concert. Hallelujah is also played every Saturday night in the Israeli Defense Forces radio network. Bono said it might be the most perfect song in the world. Brandi Carlile slept with a boombox playing a loop of it for 8 or 9 hours when she was young. It's been seen hundreds of millions of times on YouTube. It soared to such incredible heights, even the backlash can't bring it down. When it was sung at the 2011 Emmy Awards by the three Canadian tenors, New York Magazine wrote, "Hallelujah is on the artistic ban list." Well, sorry, New York Magazine. After that performance, the download of the tenors' Hallelujah jumped 15,000%. And this week, the judges and the contestants sang it as a tribute to Newtown on The Voice.
And even though it all went wrong, I stand before the Lord of song with nothing on my tongue but Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
What is it about this song? Alan Light traces the arc of it in his new book, The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. And he joins us from NPR in New York. And Alan, you're right, you first started to think about this song in 2010. Why? What happened?
Well, what prompted me was, as kind of hokey as this sounds, it's actually true. I was in Yom Kippur services. Here's the holiest day of the Jewish calendar, and the choir came out and they sang Hallelujah. Everybody there knew the song. They were weeping. It was a very emotional moment. And this was the same year that Katie Lang had sung it at the Winter Olympic opening ceremonies. Justin Timberlake sang it at the Haiti telethon following the earthquake. And I just started to think about what I knew about this story and realized there was a trajectory that this song went through that really didn't compare to any other song that I could think of.
It's funny you tell that story because it seems as if everyone has their own moment where they intersect with the song. And I was just thinking that ours was, we had heard it, but when it really put a spear through our heart, we'd gone to New York on the first anniversary of 9/11, and we were going to do, as in addition to our coverage, we were going to do a story on New Yorkers learning to use a trapeze, which had been set up, it turns out, in the shadow of where the World Trade Towers were. And it turns out that the people that we met who had come there were going on the trapeze to try to overcome their fear of 9/11. And so we used Jeff Buckley's version, to sort of, play against this sound of these people using the trapeze. And that was where it sort of shot an arrow through my heart.
September 11 does figure in to the story of this song that VH1 used the Jeff Buckley version for their video of tribute video to the rescue workers that was in sort of constant rotation right. In the days after.
We are going to pivot from the news now to a song you probably know.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord.
Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. The baffled king composing Hallelujah,
Hallelujah.
Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, Katie Lang, singing Cohen's Hallelujah. But then there are also these versions. Started with Michael McDonald, British-American Idol contestant Alexander Burke, a school choir in Iceland, and Adam Sandler at the Sandy Benefit concert. Hallelujah is also played every Saturday night in the Israeli Defense Forces radio network. Bono said it might be the most perfect song in the world. Brandi Carlile slept with a boombox playing a loop of it for 8 or 9 hours when she was young. It's been seen hundreds of millions of times on YouTube. It soared to such incredible heights, even the backlash can't bring it down. When it was sung at the 2011 Emmy Awards by the three Canadian tenors, New York Magazine wrote, "Hallelujah is on the artistic ban list." Well, sorry, New York Magazine. After that performance, the download of the tenor's Hallelujah jumped 15,000%. And this week, the judges and the contestants sang it as a tribute to Newtown on The Voice.
And even though it all went wrong, I stand before the Lord of song with nothing on my tongue but
What is it about this song? Alan Light traces the arc of it in his new book, The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. And he joins us from NPR in New York. And Alan, you write, you first started to think about this song in 2010. Why? What happened?
Well, what prompted me was, as kind of hokey as this sounds, it's actually true. I was in Yom Kippur services. Here's the holiest day of the Jewish calendar, and the choir came out and they sang Hallelujah. Everybody there knew the song. They were weeping. They, you know, were, it was a very emotional moment. And this was the same year that Katie Lang had sung it at the Winter Olympic opening ceremonies. Justin Timberlake sang it at the Haiti telethon following the earthquake. And I just started to think about what I knew about this story and realized there was a trajectory that this song went through that really didn't compare to any other song that I could think of.
It's funny you tell that story because it seems as if everyone has their own moment where they intersect with the song. And I was just thinking that ours was, you know, we had heard it, but when it really put a spear through our heart, we had gone to New York on the first anniversary of 9/11, and we were going to do, as in addition to our coverage, we were going to do a story on New Yorkers learning to use a trapeze, which had been set up, it turns out, in the shadow of where the World Trade Towers were. And it turns out that the people that we met who had come there were going on the trapeze to try to overcome their fear of 9/11. And so we used Jeff Buckley's version, you know, to sort of, you know, play against this sound of these people using the trapeze. And that was where it sort of shot an arrow through my heart.
September 11 does figure in to the story of this song that VH1 used the Jeff Buckley version for their video of tribute video to the rescue workers that was in sort of constant rotation in the days after September 11. And that was, I think, one of the uses of this song that really did kind of cement it in the public's imagination.
So, you know, of course, we have to ask, why didn't it take off when it was first recorded way back in 1984? And to ask that question, let's talk just a little bit about the song. As we say, most people have heard it, but people are drawn to the music, others are drawn to the lyrics. Start with the lyrics. In the original Leonard Cohen version, they're biblical, they're sexy. You write blend of sacred and sexual. That's, you know, sort of defines Leonard Cohen. But what's it about?
What Leonard Cohen has said is what he was trying to do was take this concept of Hallelujah, this idea that comes, you know, directly from the Old Testament, and just say, in all of our lives, we face difficulty and struggle and pain, and sometimes all you can do is just kind of throw up your hands and stand back and look at the wonder of it all and the amazement of being alive and say Hallelujah.
And just some of the lyrics, we'll have them at herenow.org, touches on the biblical stories of King David and Samson. The first lyrics, "I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord."
And then it goes on to talk about, you know, being tied to a kitchen chair to cut someone's hair. You say I took the name in vain. I don't even know the name. But if I did, well, really, what's it to you? So a little bit of the sacred, a little bit of the profane, and lyrics that were changed through the years. We'll touch on that, but why was it rejected when Leonard Cohen first recorded it?
It's 1984. Leonard is 50 years old, and this is the year that is really the, in some ways, the biggest year ever in pop music history. It's the year of Purple Rain and Born in the USA and Like a Virgin and Thriller is still going. MTV is ruling the world. And, you know, a fantastic line from the legendary record man, Walter Yetnikoff, who was the head of Leonard's label. When he turned down the album, he said, "Leonard, we all know that you're great. We just can't tell if you're any good. We know we're supposed to respect your work, but we don't know if anybody's really going to buy this thing." Obviously, now it sounds insane that he turned in this song that would become one of the most recorded songs of, you know, of all time. But when the record came out on a small independent label a little bit later, none of the reviews of the record picked up on Hallelujah at all. So it's not like this thing was, you know, a gem that the label was too blind to see. Nobody could see it.
Well, and we want to put Leonard Cohen in context here. He is, for many people, but just in case, at this point, he'd already written some of the great songs of all time. Bird on a Wire, Suzanne, songs covered by artists like Judy Collins. Orange Bicycle, did one of my favorite versions of So Long, Marianne. Then there's I Loved You in the Morning. It's, you know, a song I usually need medical attention after hearing. But let's listen to some of the other songs that Leonard Cohen had already written.
Suzanne takes you down to a place by the river, like a bird on a wire.
So
I love you in the morning, our kisses deep and warm, your hair upon the pillow like a sleepy golden star.
Leonard Cohen there at the end. Oh, it kills me. We're speaking to Alan Light. His book is The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah, a song we thought might be useful this week. We're going to hear more after a break, what Jeff Buckley brought to it in a minute, here and now.
Distances, and both of us must try. Your eyes are soft with sorrow. Hey, that's no way.
Welcome back to our conversation about Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, which was rejected by his record label in 1984 when he first recorded it. And quite honestly, we know some people still hate it. Our listener Joe Marino tweeted yesterday that he falls in the "it makes me want to put a fork in my eye" camp. And that could be in part because it's been covered horribly by people like Bono. We'll link you to the awful versions at hereandnow.org. But in 1991, John Cale of the Velvet Underground recorded this version.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you?
Cale's exquisite Hallelujah eventually appeared in the movie Shrek in 2001. But before that, it inspired Jeff Buckley, who recorded it in 1994 and really launched it. Alan Light traces this history in The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and The Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. Alan, Jeff Buckley, with this impossibly bittersweet backstory, his father, folk singer Tim Buckley, died of a drug overdose at 28. Jeff maybe infuses his Hallelujah with the pain of never knowing his dad. Then Jeff also dies young at 30, drowning while swimming in the Mississippi River. So the song now becomes enshrouded with his death.
Several people in the book described it the same way. They said that when you listen to Jeff's recording, it's like you're listening in on something you're not supposed to be hearing. A young man discovering heartbreak and pain and yearning. Jeff described his version of the song as the Hallelujah of the orgasm. When Jeff Buckley died a couple of years later in a almost seems fictional rock and roll death, there became all of this mystery and romance and all of this stuff around Jeff Buckley. And when people went back to his music, Hallelujah became sort of this real-time epitaph for him.
Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing Hallelujah, Hallelujah.
So, you know, his version, it also becomes the anthem for 9/11. I mean, it's all tied together in this terrible sadness.
Jeff Buckley's version really, you know, becomes the template for most of the versions that then follow.
Unless you're much younger. And then you encountered it through Shrek. And they used John Cale's version.
At this central moment in what would become one of the biggest animated movies of all time, here's John Cale from the Velvet Underground singing the words of Leonard Cohen, and millions of kids respond to it.
Yeah.
When it came time to put out the soundtrack, it was decided that a DreamWorks studio release should have a soundtrack with only DreamWorks artists on the soundtrack. They had a young artist they had signed to DreamWorks named Rufus Wainwright go in and cut Hallelujah.
Heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you?
We just think it's so weird. His version's so glorious, but we spoke to him recently about how he and his husband are raising their baby with Leonard Cohen's daughter, Lorca, who gave birth to the child. So it's just, there's this synergy there. It's kind of weird.
It's a, you know, this meeting of the royal families.
The Canadian royal families, yes.
That's right.
Yes. But wait, there's more. Because you have a whole new life given to the song Hallelujah. And it seems to me many different forms. When Simon Cowell, sort of the mastermind of the American Idol, starts giving it to contestants, starting in Britain with an extraordinary version from Alexander Burke. Let's listen here.
Well, maybe there's a God above, but all I've ever learned from love was how to shoot somebody who outdrew you.
After it was used for this sad scene in Shrek and then used around September 11th. Then it became the sad song over and over again on these TV dramas, on ER and House and The West Wing. You know, it was the song that came up for the big emotional moment in the season finale. But then it became so pervasive and it started to take back on the more triumphant feeling of this song. And certainly that's what the different singing competitions, Idol and X Factor and The Voice and everybody that's used this song, cranked up more of the sense of overcoming.
Paul Simon, who wrote another modern hymn, Bridge Over Troubled Water, tells you that Hallelujah, you know, at a certain point began to be the alternative. But as you're just saying, not really, because nobody changes Bridge Over Troubled Water when they sing it. Hallelujah, they do, as we heard. But do you think it has been broken? Salon.com writes at one point, you know, it's become cheap emotional shorthand for spiritual feelings, you know, that a beautiful, mysterious song has been turned into a tacky karaoke number. Do you agree?
I do think that the sort of television drama, you know what emotional button it's going to push, and you can drop it into a scene and just know, okay, people know that they're supposed to feel isolated and sad. Now, I think that kind of got done to death, and I don't really see a need to keep going to there.
Leonard Cohen, we don't have time to go into too much detail here, but while his song Hallelujah was soaring, his life was crashing in many ways. He had millions of dollars pilfered by an assistant who turned out to be something of a stalker, if I'm reading that correctly. And here's somebody in his 70s who, you know, realized, I got to go back out on the road to make some money. But then something magical happened for him. He took off again. How does he feel? You know, his career has been resuscitated. How does he feel now about this song?
He looks at this whole thing from a little bit of a distance, which as a Zen monk probably is the way that he looks at a lot of things. And if it's been one of the triggers for this incredible late career resurgence, then that's one more fantastic achievement for this song.
It's quite something. This 70, almost 80-year-old can now perform a song he wrote nobody cared about in 1984. He can perform it at the Coachella Festival, and you see hundreds of, you know, young people with tears streaming down their faces. Who would have thought? type of 1984. Alan Light, his book is The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and The Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. We'll have an excerpt and some music you can listen to at hearnow.org. Alan, thank you so much.
Thrilled to be here.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
News is next, here and now.
Hallelujah.